Are you ready? Hey, think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Hour number two, 713-780. ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. If you wish to text the show, you can also get us on The Blitz Facebook page. Find The Blitz. Click like. You're good to go. There's also Twitter at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at A.J. is the real. At Jon Snow with a zero, at Degenerates 975, and of course you know the number to text the show. Out here at Sam Houston Race Park, Jon back in studio, Voldemort out here keeping us on air, Mrs. Voldemort here too. So we're just having a good old time at Sam Houston Race Park. Live racing starts at 7, 50 Cent Beer starts at 6. We'll have R.J. Bell at 5:30, and we will have the track announcer Jim Byers out here at 6 o'clock.
Steven says, would making Jon eat a Tide Pod cause more trouble than the pepper spray incident? That's actually a really good idea, Steven.
No,
Jon,
it's not.
Would you be willing to eat a Tide Pod?
No.
Would any of our interns?
That seems like a Trey thing.
We can't do that to interns.
Yeah, that legal. There's legal.
What about Tyler?
Dude, we almost got arrested for you pepper spraying Jon.
Wait, Jose is full-time now, right?
He is.
Let's let Jose eat a Tide Pod. He's a millennial.
No.
Come on. Just one. How about half a Tide Pod?
Are you going to eat the other half?
No. I'm not a moron.
I don't think Jose's a moron either.
He's a grown man who still watches wrestling. He's a moron. Trust me.
He's not that grown. Jeez. He just got a job. Give him a break.
All right. Fine.
Remember when you were that age, you wouldn't have done it either. Well, maybe.
Wouldn't have done what?
Eating a Tide Pod.
No, because I didn't grow up in this idiot age.
By the way, Mike Steinler, who works out here, brought us a ticket. It was a $10 win ticket on a 9-1 shot. And at the fairgrounds, who ran a good third, he actually got stopped mid-stretch or he might have won the damn race.
Damn.
So that was a very well-meant horse.
Now, what if he would have said win, place, show? What would 9-1 have paid?
Well, there were two long shots on top of him, so the show price was probably pretty good. I didn't see what it was.
See, that's why I don't like to get greedy.
You know me, Fred. Greed is good, AJ.
But you know when you tell me about a horse, I almost always do win, place, show. Because then I just need him to finish in the top three. Maybe I won't strike it as rich, but I'll at least get something back. You know what I mean?
Well, and if I'm right and he wins, you do real well.
Yeah.
It's not like
I get all three of them.
Yeah. And you're very happy. You're a very happy guy. Hey, I want to mention something Lamont wrote for Houston Sports and stuff about why the Rockets and Astros have attendance problems. And he says that the problem is downtown, that most people don't want to
go downtown to watch the games.
Yeah, and I
got to be honest, it's easier for me to get downtown than it is to Reliant.
Well, his point was, oh, Reliant doesn't have any problems because it's in an easier area to get to. And I think that's the one flaw in his argument.
I think it depends on where you live, because Reliant's a pain in the ass for me to get to.
And it's 8 games a year. And that's it. I mean, if Reliant were downtown, the Texans would still sell out. So I kind of think that's a hole in the argument. But I do think it's a problem for people who live, like if you live in Sugar Land or the Woodlands, and a lot of people work downtown. Like if you have families especially, you probably live in Pearland or Sugar Land.
In the suburbs.
In the suburbs, yeah, and that makes sense. And say you want to take your kids to the game, but you work downtown. So you're going to have to leave at 4 o'clock on your work day to go get your kids, come back downtown. You're probably not getting home till 11 or 12 on a work night. I agree with all those points. But, I mean, I think that's just the nature of the city. The city's spread out. Now,
yeah.
The other thing that he said
There's no easy place to get to in Houston if you don't.
No.
I mean, getting to the Woodlands for you isn't easy.
No.
Getting to the Woodlands for me is very easy.
Getting out here is not easy for me, especially today when there was one of the freeways shut down and
right.
I had to loop around and take this ridiculously long trek to get here.
It's just such a big city that, I mean, depending on where you are, things can be easy or not easy for you.
Yeah, and, you know, it's so spread out.
Downtown's no less convenient to me than most other places.
Yeah, well, but when he's throwing parking and all the other stuff that comes with it, I mean, I get that. I get why it can turn into a very long day just to go to a game, and you have to want to. But I there's not really a fix for that. And Neil says that most people are – that Houston has like 60% natives. I don't think that's accurate either. I think we've got 28% of people here from different countries. And I think that number is closer to 50-50 now and growing every day in terms of transients. So I was not able to find the exact census numbers. The only one I could find was that we have 28% of our people were born in Houston were born in a different country. What's going on, Dwight? So that's a pretty significant number.
Yeah.
And now you multiply all the people. And you just look at population growth over the last 10 years. Where's that coming from? That's not people making more babies.
Right.
It's people moving down here. But I thought it was a good column because it does – I think it addresses the thing, the fact that just parking and everything down there is not easy. And the traffic is brutal when you're trying to go to Toyota Center. And you may not get there on time. And if you live far out, I can see where it's a pain in the ass. But it's also – again, it just depends on where you live. Like getting to Constellation Field is not easy for me, but I like to go out there.
Yeah.
Same thing here with the track. Man, I love coming out to the track, but it's I know that – I'm committing at least 45 minutes to get here.
Right. I'm sure you wish the track was where Minute Maid Park is. For you, that'd be ideal.
Yeah, yeah. I would rather just walk right over.
Right.
And of course, I'd be here every day and night, but it's probably probably for the best. But somebody says, going over to Lions tonight to play that tournament, is it BYOB? Yes.
Yes, it is.
Bring your own stuff, and they'll put it in the fridge for you if you got beer, and the girls will bring it to you when you ask. It's very cool. It's a good setup, man. So, 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. It says eating Tide Pods is nature's way of thinning the population. I'm okay with thinning the population. Like I said, I think we could get rid of 5% of the people based on the text line. I think if we get rid of 5%, just those 5%.
Yeah.
The world would be a better place.
Yeah,
I'll start with that. We need to have a purge, and basically know who they are, and then for one night we can all go and kill them for free.
Yeah,
and we'll just target that group. And anybody who would eat a Tide Pod, we're gonna go ahead and kill them, because I think it's better for society. They don't have to go to the emergency room and spend a bunch of money. We'll just kill them.
It's a good idea.
I like the idea of this purge. We should make this happen. So we said, Tide Pods are gluten-free. Yeah, there are a lot of things. So Lamont says getting NRG is simple to get considering a typical on Sunday with way less traffic. It depends, man. It depends on where you are.
Around that stadium, man.
I know you. Well, you know that back way, too. There's one way to get in that's pretty easy, but the traffic jams are hour and a half sometimes.
If you're on 610, starting at like Post Oak, all the way to the stadium is a mess.
Yeah, and you know, or coming down that other side where Kirby is now. I think it's better. A lot more people are taking that train, and that helps. But it's still a mess. I mean, yeah, I don't think that's easy at all. In fact, I don't park down there. I take the train. I don't want any part of trying to get down there. That's getting out. I mean, but that's sporting events.
Yeah.
When you have 70,000 people in one place for a football game or for a rodeo or for whatever, you're going to be there for a while. That's just life. And plus, getting out to me is always more dangerous than getting in because people were tailgating before the game. They drink a bunch during the game. You got a bunch of people who should not be out driving, trying to get out of there.
Right.
That's never a good thing. But no, I do agree that, I just think downtown has fewer places to park, and that's getting less and less. And I think eventually, obviously, Toyota Center, you've got a garage there.
Garage, yeah.
But Minute Maid, you've got lots, but, I mean, people park, you know, for the both those games, they'll park over on our side all the way down Polk and places like that and walk and – you know, if you don't mind walking, it's not bad, but I get it. And the traffic around there, I would always forget and say the Astros are playing and I'm out here and I'm coming home after that.
Right.
Or coming home that way after the show. I forget what the traffic's like until you get stuck in it. But that's, again, I think that's any sports thing. And I think the big thing is there's just so many games to choose from. You can take your kids on a Tuesday night during a school night?
No. I'll take my kids to a couple Astros games on the weekends, but that's about it. I'm not taking my kid. Well, I don't take my kids to Texans game because when I go to Texans games, I'm working. But I don't know that I've taken either of my kids to a Rockets game in years. And yeah, I mean, the Astros games weekends only.
Yeah, I used to take mine to basically all the UH games and a lot of Texans games and a few Astros games here and there. I mean, when they were younger, we'd go probably five times a year to Rockets and Astros and two or three to the Texans, and we pretty much went to all the UH games. And my daughter and I still try to go to a UH game every year. But, you know, it's – I'm also at the point where I'm kind of atypical because I don't enjoy the crowds. I like the games, but I'm getting to be an old man who would rather just sit at home, drink his own beer, watch his TV so I can rewind stuff if I want to see it again.
Right.
And
that's what I prefer.
And not have the guy next to me screaming and spilling beer on me and having a, like as has happened at UH games, having an old man want to fight us, like an older man than me. So I just – I mean, I've been to enough games that I don't really need to go to any more in person.
Right.
But that's because I'm old. Quick break. It is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. It's a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. We're just speaking with a professional athlete there. It's,
Are you talking about me?
No. I was talking about Rocket Rosen's daughter, Portland, who's a professional golfer.
Oh.
That was her. I didn't recognize her. She's grown up so much. So... I'm pretty sure she won like the state championship one year when she was a junior.
Nice.
Yeah, she's good at golf. 713-780-ESPN. Exciting MMA news we were just looking at.
Yeah. Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic, champion versus champion. Looks like it's going to happen at UFC 226. Yeah. And that's the fight to make, in my opinion. And Daniel Cormier has been hesitant about moving up to heavyweight because his friend and training partner, Cain Velasquez, is a heavyweight, which is why Daniel Cormier moved down to begin with, because he wanted to be the champion. But when at that time, Cain was the champion, so Cormier went down and beat all the light heavyweights except John Jones.
Cheating John Jones.
Yeah, cheating, coked out John Jones. But I've always said I think Daniel Cormier can beat any heavyweight in the UFC, too. He never lost at heavyweight when he was competing at heavyweight. And he plans on retiring at the end of next year. So if that's the case, then, hey, man, that cements your legacy. If you're the 205-pound and heavyweight champion at the same time, I don't care what happened with John Jones. You're one of the best fighters of all time. And then you walk away from the sport. Let Cain Velasquez come up and win that title. It'll be vacant, presuming that you walk away. So as long as Cain keeps winning between now and then, he'll get a chance to be that champion again. So it's pretty crazy that there was a time, and Luke Rockhold, since he's not at AKA American Kickboxing Academy anymore full time, but there was a time when Cain Velasquez, Daniel Cormier, Luke Rockhold, and Khabib Nurmagomedov were all at the same gym and were all in line to win the titles or already had the titles. And Luke Rockhold's getting another title shot. Daniel Cormier is a champion. Cain Velasquez is close to a title shot. Khabib's about to get a title shot. I mean, that is just a gym full of monsters. I mean, imagine being like the low man on the food chain at that gym. Would not be a fun job.
And you were talking about some other big champion versus champions fights.
Yeah, they've been talking about doing this, and if and that fight is now announced, so the 226 Cormier Stipe fight has been announced. They're not close to done on the other ones, according to Ariel Helwani. But we've known for a while that Demetrius Johnson and TJ Dillashaw, the 125 and 135 champions, were probably going to fight, and that Chris Cyborg and Amanda Nunes, the 135 and 45 women's champions, were probably going to fight, and they would probably try to do those all on the same card and make it their mega summer card. And I got to be honest, that would be a massive, massive card. Yeah, I think we should
be out there for that.
We should be. It would do huge pay-per-view numbers. Maybe that can be on SportsMap's budget. Maybe you can send us out there, Fred.
Maybe, since we're saving money next week.
There you go.
We might be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
But I would hope they'd send us out there for that.
That would be nice.
It's been a while since we should work something out with them on that. I mean, because I know we can get the rooms, and I bet we could do that. 713-780-ESPN is the number, 713-780-3776. And, man, I've gotten to almost nothing on my list today. I wanted to talk about your article. We did that. I wanted to talk about Lamont's article. We did that. But I've got, like, 500 things. Did you see that ESPN's thinking about selling 538?
I don't even know what 538 is.
It's one of their websites. It's a Nate Silver website.
Oh, they could sell it. It wouldn't change my life at all.
There's some good stuff on there, but, man, they made some weird investments. And I think that was kind of one of them because I just don't know what the – I don't know. Like, when they did Grantland, I thought it was a good concept, but you spent an awful lot of money on it.
Yeah.
I don't understand where they're going with some of this
stuff.
And
they're so willing to jump ship when they feel there's no consistency there. You know what I mean? Like, I always say in radio, man, the best thing you can have is some consistency. That's like what people get into when they're listening to a radio. So they don't want their the host changing every other week. They want a consistent lineup, which, listen, we've made some changes, and I think we've made some changes for the better recently at our station, but every time there's change, I'm like, ugh, great. You know, it's frustrating because it changes people's routines and they don't like it. But ESPN they're so willy-nilly about changing things up. Like Jemele Hill.
Yeah.
It was such a big deal. Jemele Hill was on the 6 p.m. Sports Center. Ratings aren't good. Jemele Hill's going to be off 6 p.m. Sports Center. Like, all right. You think that's Jemele Hill's fault, or maybe Sports Center ain't quite what it used to be? I'm far from a Jemele Hill fan. I'm not trying to defend her because I think she sucks. But I also think if you're going to try something, try it and let it stick for a while and see if it can build anything. Don't give it we've had it for 6 months or a year and be like, we got to get out of this thing. It's just, it makes your brand look crappy.
Yeah, I mean, I've read conflicting reports, which somebody said she asked for this, which I don't really buy. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I haven't seen that show. I can't comment on whether it's any good. It doesn't seem like something I would be into, but I'm on air when they're doing their thing, so I just have never seen it. I think that the SportsCenter model that they're trying to go with, when I do watch it, for me it's unwatchable, and maybe I'm not their target audience. But so much of it is, it's like, my team did this and my team did that. And I find myself, when I want to know about stuff, if I want NFL stuff, I go to NFL Network. If I want MLB, I go to MLB Network.
Right.
But even NFL Network, their morning show gets goofy like that too at times, and I don't watch it as much because they get off on all these weird things that aren't – I mean, I don't mind getting off football a little bit, but be entertaining about it. It's just boring. So,
did you guys see this thing about Jonathan Coachman? He used to work for WWE. He also did a bunch of stuff for ESPN before he left, I think, in November.
Yeah, I know who he is.
The coach.
Yeah, the coach. So one of the frustrations, this came out, I think, yesterday or today, but he said one of the frustrations he had with his direct boss at ESPN was that there was one instance he gave where I think it was Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz 2. And then SummerSlam was the night before, or I think the night after that. And he told his boss that, hey, send me to Vegas. I'll cover the Diaz-McGregor fight. And then send me to New York and I'll do that too. And his boss said no because they had a bunch of cameras at preseason NFL. And he said that's one of the big reasons why he left, because they didn't know how to, I guess, manage stories or put up stories. And it, his direct boss basically told him that no one's going to watch or no one's going to be interested in McGregor, Diaz, or SummerSlam. And then he went right before he quit, he went to his boss's boss and told him that I was frustrated with this. And that boss said, well, you should have told me because I would have sent you there. So I think that's one a lot of the problems that ESPN is having, that you have a lot of people, I guess a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and a lot of them have different thoughts on what's a good story and what's not.
It sounds like newspapers all over again.
Was that SummerSlam indeed a big deal?
I don't know if it, I mean WWE in general. I think it's a semi big deal, but I think, you know, Connor Nate Diaz too was a pretty big deal.
It was massive.
Yeah, and I don't know why they didn't have anybody out there.
Well, that's I think what it sounds like is what it used to be in newspapers. You try to convince somebody, hey man, this is going to get interest. We were the first major newspaper to cover UFC. Actually send people to fights, do a weekly notebook, and it was a sell job because there were a bunch of old guys there who, now what the heck is this? It looks like that human cockfighting thing.
Yeah.
And I tell them, listen, man, this is like the number two demo for males 18 to 34. It's kind of who we want reading the paper. You know, we need to get a younger demographic. And so it wasn't an easy sell. And I had a lot of people say, oh, no, you can't do that. And it's like, well, I'm going to watch me. And it got great response. Is that and Lance Zierlein's blog was like one of the most popular ones when I told him, we got to get this guy writing a blog for the Chronicle. Like, oh, he's a radio guy. What does he know? More hits than you.
Yeah, what's he know?
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think you get into this where you have people who, I mean, you always have to try to be open to things that you're not into if you're in that position. And, like, there's a lot of stuff on SportsMap that I'm not into esports, but you know what? People are interested in it. We're going to do some esports stuff. And why not try it? What's the worst that happens?
Yeah.
People don't click. All right. I think there was music. Quick break. We'll be right back with some RJ Bell action. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz live here at Sam Houston Race Park, where someone else has just bought us a ticket on an 18-to-1 shot. So we'll see if this one comes
told me
through.
It was a winner.
All right. I'm going to trust
you. He said, A.J., I picked you a winner. And I said, are you sure? Yes.
Okay. The only person I know that's sure is RJ Bell. You can follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. What's going on, Mr. Bell?
Sure, the ticket's going to lose.
Oh, come on, RJ. don't come in here being Debbie Downer today.
I like that, though. That's a clever idea is, you know, instead of buying someone a beer, buy him a ticket on a long shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of like it. Somebody did it earlier. And
I'm having sober January, so this does me a lot more good than a beer does.
Oh, so that's interesting. So, like, sometime on New Year's Eve, you said this has become a problem.
No, it was actually the day before New Year's Eve. I could barely drink at all on actual New Year's Eve because the night before, I was obliterated. Like, it was bad. So I decided.
Are you struggling?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I mean, we're almost done now. But, yeah, I've had no red meat and no alcohol since January 1st, and I've lost 23 pounds.
Now, are you going to drink on February 1st, like at midnight?
Of course. Of course.
There you go.
Yeah, and I'll be drinking at the Super Bowl and eating brisket. That's the plan. But, yeah, I'm trying to get my life in order a little, RJ. Just a little.
Or at least a month.
Well, I'm gonna slow it down come February too. I'm not gonna drink every night anymore. That's my goal.
Oh. Got a dream, baby.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So I assume you're the one who broke the $3 million bet on the Eagles. Do we know, is that a money line? Do we know, is that against the spread? What do we know about that, other than it was at the MGM and it's the World Series Let It Ride guy?
Yeah, so he was negotiating to bet $10 million on the Eagles with the MGM. MGM, they were scared. They only took the three. Big bet on the money line, and actually it was at plus 155. So the negotiation was like how much of a haircut they could give him, where the market was like plus 180 at the time, and they forced him to take 155. Now, to me, it's another sign. You know, if this guy were playing college basketball, I'd be like, you know, the game's fixed. He doesn't care about the prices so much because he just wants to get down as much as he can. But when you have something like the World Series and something like the Super Bowl, you can feel very, very confident. There's no corruption when it comes to like game fixing. Thus, if you take bad numbers, you cannot win in the long run. So this guy's had an amazing run. I'll be conceptually rooting for him because I hate bookies in general. Like, that's one thing I've never understood about my industry. You've got a lot of, let's say, maladjusted people, like the kind of people that didn't go to the prom, let's say. You know the types, right? Close your eyes and think. Did you go to the prom, Fred?
No.
Really?
No, I did not.
Were you home like Matt, like drinking? Like,
no.
You were defective or something?
I was such a stoner at the time. I was just more
interested. Fred was making his list of people to kill at school.
You're on my list. AJ, I bet you went to like three proms.
I did go to proms, yes.
But I'm saying you went even after you graduated.
I think you went to one last year.
I'm thinking you had one hottie that you said, like, you know, hey, I know I'm 20 and she's 17, but, you know, WTF.
I'll be honest. If I wouldn't have gone to the Army, like, the day after I graduated, that maybe I would have come back into town for a prom, but no, it didn't happen.
I can't lie. I did go to three.
Well, you went to some after you graduated?
I did one.
Oh, you're a scumbag, Wooderson.
It's called love. It was called love. In my school, for whatever reason, and I don't know if this was common in you guys' school, but it was always the senior guys and the sophomore girls. Like, I don't know what it is, you know, about that 24 months or whatever, but it was like an inordinate, because in theory you'd figure, okay, you're gonna have senior and senior, and sometimes you're gonna have senior with someone older outside, right? And then senior, junior, senior, sophomore, you know, I guess maybe senior, freshman. So statistically it should be broken up a certain way. It was like probably 3/4 of the guys were dating sophomores.
Did you guys tell me exactly why that happens? You want to know my theory on that, RJ?
I'm ready.
Okay, so freshman, it's an awkward time. You're not going to fit in. You're the new kid at high school. It's awkward. But once you're a sophomore, you're adjusted a little bit, and you're really looking to start to fit into the school. And the best way to be cool is to hang out with older kids, like with juniors and seniors who are already established at the school. So sophomore girls are willing to put out for senior guys because it's a status thing. It gets them invited to parties. It lets them go to prom. Because I don't know about how it was at your school, but in my school, sophomores couldn't go to prom without a senior.
Here's the thing, AJ, though. When you were dating the sophomore and Fred was a sophomore, he was alone getting stoned trying to, like, deal with the loneliness. I mean, did
when
you
Fred
ever
Fred was a sophomore, I was, like, negative 9 years old. I mean, I was...
When I was a sophomore, I was actually dating a senior girl.
Oh, yeah. But somehow you didn't go to the prom as a senior.
No. By then, I could have gone as a junior. I didn't want to. I wasn't into it, man. I was kind of anti-establishment. I didn't want to be around school stuff.
Fred had a leather jacket in high school, RJ.
Well, I had an Army jacket with like an MIA, like a Vietnam MIA patch on it. Which, in hindsight, you know, I guess as a kid, I mean, obviously it's an important concept, but like that, I was a weird combination of like watching like Family Ties and Alex P. Keaton and thinking, okay, I want to get rich and be, you know, be like Alex. And then on the other hand, I had long hair and an army jacket. It's a weird hybrid.
Somehow we got off on this, but you were making a point about the books.
Was I? Really?
Yeah, and about how people...
They were scared. They took the plus 155. I'm not sure how it got going from there. But it does show you these books. Oh, and how he can't win long term because if you're taking bad numbers. And really, of all the things we talk about, this is probably the most important behind AJ's dating history is professional bettors bet numbers. They don't bet teams. You give me plus 10, I'd make my biggest bet of the year on the Eagles. Give me pick 'em, I'd make my biggest bet of the year on New England. Well, no one's going to do that, but it's about the numbers. And if a guy's willing to take plus 155 when the market's 180, he might win this game. He might win 10 in a row. But if he bets enough, he's going to lose it all.
Is that one that the MGM will maybe put off on some other books, some of that bet it elsewhere?
You know, they'd much, much rather. So let's not get too much in the weeds because numbers don't work too well over the radio. But I think I can do this very high level. So they've got their exposure at plus 155. So anything above 155 on New England, so minus 160 even, right, which is much, much lower than it is now, would still give them a profit. So let's say the market's at minus 190 right now. Yeah, they could go lay 190 and hedge off at that point and get New England action laying the 190. But what they'd rather do is create a situation where they get the bets themselves. They'd get the bets themselves at cheaper prices. So what they're going to do is, and I bet, and you can go to pregame.com, go to our game center, and you see the free odds report. We've got, I think, the best free odds on the internet. My guess is you'll see the MGM be the lowest price on New England action the rest of the week. So let's use an analogy. Imagine if you own a Walmart or a Walmart type store that you have total control of. And someone drives up in the back and they go, hey, look, I found a bunch of stereos, right? And you say, okay. And then you pay in cash, you get the stereos, and lo and behold, now you've got 100 stereos. You're probably going to sell those like 20% lower than your competitor because you need to get rid of these things, but it's still going to be a profit to you. Well, they've got so much exposure on Philly at plus 155, they're going to make New England cheap. But because they got such a good price at 155, even with New England cheap, they're going to make good money.
That's RJ Bell. Follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. So some news on the NBA this week as well. Talk about that for a little bit because that's it's obviously something that, to see a league try to embrace this.
Yeah, and this is one, and we can dig in however you guys like, but what I will say, keeping it in the ESPN family, is I did my national segment with Stephen A. Smith yesterday, and we did like 12 minutes just debating legalization of sports betting. And to me, it felt like I spent my life getting ready to debate Stephen A. on gambling. And I really think it was I thought Stephen A. had good points, but I thought I really got my message across. And on my Twitter at RJ in Vegas, I've got the link to that. And then also on ESPN Los Angeles, I was talking with Ramona Shelburne and Steve Mason, and we did about 12 minutes on the same topic, but it really got on very different subjects within the topic. And one of them being, and I think this one's particularly fascinating if we want to talk about it, why I believe Vegas will be at a huge competitive disadvantage when this does go national. But I do have both of those sound files up on my Twitter. I think they're both quite good. How would you guys, I mean, tell me the angle you'd like to take on this, because we could probably do a half hour just on this.
Well, first off, next time you talk to Stephen A., tell him clean up after himself because he doesn't. But I like the idea of
listen,
how this.
Whenever, here's just so you know, Fred. Whenever people make over $5 million a year, I'm always nice to them under any circumstances.
I don't care. You can make that much. If you're a slob, you're a slob. So, but let's talk about how Vegas will be at a disadvantage. I think that's fascinating.
This is an example. And Texas has so many small towns, and I was actually rewatching some Friday Night Lights. What a show. Do you guys love that show?
I love it. Fred doesn't.
Well, I guess when you don't go to proms, it's like, you know, you're not the type that's going to enjoy Dillon High football. But
hey, man, in high school, I was just trying to be a rock star and get stoned, man. I didn't become an adult until I got to college.
We got the stone part. We got freaks and geeks, baby. All right, so in small towns, this happens all the time, right? You've got the 5'11" guy that's a really good athlete. He can almost get the rim, you know, if he didn't eat lunch. And he's the best basketball player in town, right? And then you go across, you know, the county or whatever, and you're playing. There's three guys that can dunk on the other team, and you're in trouble. Vegas is like that 5'11" basketball player. Is we've had a monopoly with legalized betting for, you know, as long and time immemorial, as they say. And what's happened is you've got the same dinosaurs. They all came up. If you look at the pedigree of these bookmakers, I mean, first, don't look for college degrees because you're hardly going to find one. I mean, these are, you know, some of them are nice guys, and multiple ones I would consider friends, but uneducated, very street savvy, but their entire mentality is getting over on the customer. And let me give you a good example is this Let It Ride better when he was betting the World Series. He went into a given book and he wanted his price, and they kept, like, every 100,000 they try to take a dime off him and dime off him and a dime, you know, so it's like get plus 180, 170, 160, you know, just to get an extra 100 down. I mean, it was just like they said, oh, this is like a learning disabled person with a wad of money. It's like, how can we get that money from them? And if you are a criminal, that's how criminals think. And these aren't criminals, but that is a criminal mentality, right? How do I steal from them? And to me, that might be fine in the short term when it comes to the profit. I'm not talking the ethics. I'm talking the profit. But in the long term, and if you're a business fan, this is an old school business theorist, Peter Drucker, D-R-U-C-K-E-R. Peter Drucker, one of the great business minds in the modern era, said, all your business is two things: your ability to provide value, one, and your ability to do so at an economic profit for yourself, right? I can give people $10 bills all day and provide value, but I'm not going to build a business around that. And if a sports book is looking to get over, they're not providing value. They're trying to deceive. And because of that mentality, and when you have a monopoly, what's the difference, right? Imagine if you're the only Mexican restaurant in a small town. If someone wants burritos, you could have some average burritos, and they're going to eat at your place. Well, the story came out this week that Verizon, a company that buys Yahoo as an afterthought, Verizon has spent millions of dollars studying the idea of getting into sports gambling. I don't know if they're going to or not, but when those kind of guys get involved and gals, Silicon Valley, ooh, dog, look out. I'm so ready, because I'll be candid. One of my great frustrations is having to somewhat deal with these dinosaurs in town, and they're all going to be extinct here when the big boys get involved. And this will be my 3 or 4 year prediction for you, is when this thing goes wild, initially it'll be the names you've heard of, right? The brands in Vegas. Within even 3 or 4 years, the biggest players in the space will be companies you've never heard of, or at least not Vegas companies, maybe European books, maybe new operations from VCs in the Valley, but it is going to be the big boys, and it is going to be professional time, baby. And it won't just be slam dunking. It's going to be the LeBron James is getting involved against the 5'11 guy.
So just out of curiosity, what was Stephen A. arguing with you about, that this is not a good thing?
You know, he actually was playing like the perfect devil's advocate, and he was being genuine, but it's reasonable questions, right? He's like, well, RJ, what about the game's integrity? And to me, what I told him was, and I asked him, I said, you've got kids, right? Well, actually, he wasn't sure. I said, do you have kids? He goes, yeah. I go, you're going to let them drink before they're 18? And he said, no. I said, but come on, Stephen, hey, you drank before you were 18, right? He goes, maybe one or two. And it wasn't like Fred, you know. I think Stephen A. probably went to the prom. But here's the thing is if you know what's going to happen, what you try to do is make it be as least dangerous as possible, right? And I'm not trying to give parenting advice because that is paradoxical, right? Is, yeah, you know they're going to do it, but do you let them drink in your basement? Because now you know they're safe, but are you encouraging them? Right? That's the challenge, I think, for any really intelligent parent. And I'm not trying to give any opinions on that. But what I do know is gambling's happening right now in Texas. Am I wrong? Right? But so the question is, does it happen in the shadows or does it happen with regulation? And here's a basic premise, the final point that is unequivocal. If someone is tempted to do something wrong, his chance of getting caught is one of the calculations. And if you feel like you're going to get, I'll give you an example. At the local ESPN station in town, we used to have a show there. We've got a national show now, but we used to have a local show. Is they had a break room. I don't know how it is down in Houston. And they had a bunch of, you know, water and snacks, you know, Doritos. And it was the honor system, right? Take a Dorito, put a buck in the box. Well, they were so, the shortfalls were so substantial every month whenever they did their accounting, they actually put cameras in, right? I can promise you more people put a dollar in that box when the cameras came in. The analogy is that if it's regulated and legalized, betting is going to be watched very closely, analogous to the stock market. And because of that, anything that's unusual, anything that is possibly corrupt will get investigated so much more likely than if it was in the shadows. And because of that, if the amount of betting doesn't necessarily go up, just the amount of regulation and supervision, that means corruption goes down. But the average person thinks legalized betting, means more corruption. That is absolutely 180% wrong.
All right, that's RJ Bell. I love the $1 thing. That's a great analogy and a great way to put it. And yeah, okay, that's well done, sir. So I'm paying you a compliment for once. Congratulations.
Wow, there you go. There you go. You know, on my board, I know we got to run, but, you know, on my podcast and everything, I've got like an iPad board where I've got like 30 drops, right? I've got like, you know, so I can have like coffees for closers or, you know, whatever. And I've got all kind of from The Wire. I've got some, I'm going to be honest, some very cool drops. But one, I've got like six or seven Stephen A. drops because every time we do a segment, I'll listen during the segment and he'll say like, great job, RJ, or whatever. So like right now, I could, if I had my board, I could, Stephen A. would be like, that's right, RJ, you're the best or something. So, you know, you don't have, Fred, I'm going to get, maybe I'll get some drops from you and then you won't even have to give me compliments. When we're talking, I'll just drop them in and the audience won't have any idea if you're actually saying it live.
Interesting thought. I think they'll know. We have a pretty savvy audience.
Oh, because you'd be like actually nice for once.
Yeah, exactly. All right, RJ, appreciate it, man. We will talk to you again next week, and enjoy your week, sir.
Hey, thank you, AJ.
All right, that's RJ Bell. Joins us every week. We've just basically hijacked him for two segments.
Yeah, we typically do.
Yeah, it's just
that's just become sort of the standard.
Yeah.
Now.
Does that mean we need to go to break now, John?
Yes.
Is there music?
Yes, there is.
Because that's the one thing about road shows. I can never hear the music in my head.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of guessing based on the time. Now I can hear it. All right. We'll be right back. Quick break. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.